Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, our news roundup leads us into reviews of Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. That's the new name. I don't know what to tell you. Netflix is Lock and Key, and then we celebrate love with our From the Outside In topic, bad TV couples. They say if you want to tell a story right, you got to start at the beginning, so let's start the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today, I'm a fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing today?
Wonderful. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello. I don't know if it's really celebrating love if we're talking about the worst parts of it.
That was irony or sarcasm or one of those things.
Okay, all right.
Why don't you just back up? Beep, beep, beep. Just back up.
Toot, toot.
Toot, toot. I don't think that's the same thing. We are not going to talk about the Oscars this week. Because we already talked about it this week. So if you want to hear our full recap, we did an Oscars episode earlier this week. Just find it in your feed, listen to that whole thing. We're done. We've moved on. It's 2020 and we are moving forward.
Sweet.
John, you probably didn't even watch it, did you?
Watch what?
Exactly. Okay. Let's start with the news roundup. See, we're going to have a much shorter episode this week because, well, one of us has some very important things to do about town, Amanda, and the rest of us don't want to talk to the rest of us that much longer than we have to.
Yeah, I'm going on a vacation tomorrow.
Exactly. We're pressed.
John's ready to get out of here.
For the time. All right, here's our news roundup. This week, an elementary school in Berkeley was fined for playing the Lion King publicly without permission. The internet screamed, that's what they do. And Bob Iger, Disney's big dog, he made a private donation. He never said what that donation was, but he made one. That's important.
Maybe in a whole nother school.
That would be fantastic. I made a private donation. Not to you, sons of bitches. You should have paid the fee.
No, I'm just saying he just dropped a whole other school right next to the school. He's like, here, you can have this.
Wow. The Haunting of Hill House's Mike Flanagan is working on another Netflix series called Midnight Mass about an isolated island community dealing with miracles and tragedy when a mysterious young priest arrives. Kirk Douglas and Robert Conrad both tragically passed away. Well, not tragically. They had great lives. But rest in peace. Sam Raimi is taking the directing reins on Doctor Strange 2, which means maybe Uncle Ben will be fixed. All right, Mad Max 5 allegedly starts production later this year. Knives Out is officially going forward as a sequel with a new cast, except for Daniel Craig. So he's going to continue as Mr. Benoit Blanc. The Friends cast is reuniting for a special and will earn $20 million total to basically promote HBO Max. That's right. They're going to do a reunion special, not a Friends episode. They're just going to like look at old clips and stuff for $20 million. Try to get that work, people.
Each or
total? Like total.
That's a good payday.
It's not bad. It's not a bad start to the year. The reboot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is on the way again. We got another one of those coming. A Marilyn Monroe TV series is also on the way. Sex Education, guys, is getting season 3.
Woohoo!
Figured I'd wait for that. CSI is getting a limited series revival with the original cast members returning. The Hunt, that film about hunting the poor and the destitute, was pulled due to the internet whiners. Now officially has a release date of March 13th. It's coming back. They don't care if you don't like it. Turner and Hooch will be a Disney Plus series starring Josh Peck, to which I say no Hanks, no thanks. Oh, and lastly, researchers have discovered a mysterious radio signal in space keeps repeating every 16 days. Welcome to Earth. All of those, what caught your fancy, Amanda?
Did you mention the Harley Quinn Birds of Prey change in the roundup or just at the beginning?
Just at the beginning.
How about you wait? We're going to review the whole movie. You can bring it up then, but I mentioned it.
Sure. Okay. I guess then the standout from what you mentioned is the Bob Iger situation, where the school, this PTA, was trying to do a really great thing and raise money for the school, and instead they got a giant fine. And I mean, at least Bob decided to
giant,
revoke that.
It was $250. It's giant, might be a stretch.
Their goal was like underneath that.
Their goal is, I think, 800 or something.
It was 800. Yes. I was being dramatic. Yeah. But still, like, they don't have a whole... It's not like they're working with a large bucket of money. Like, the whole purpose is to get money because they don't have money. So I don't know. That was just kind of crummy. But at the same time, it starts to set a weird precedent that he did it for this one school when I guarantee you there's other schools who pay. I mean, it was even mentioned in the news that there are other schools who do pay and the libraries that pay to have those licenses. So it's like, oh, okay.
I mean, we have all seen the warnings right in front of the video rentals. So, I mean, we all knew. We're like, you can't do that. I don't know how y'all didn't know that.
Well, the librarians usually do it, and from my understanding, take care of that based off of the information I've seen in the news releases.
So they're blaming librarians?
Well, no, not necessarily, because it was the PTA that should have worked with the school to try to obtain the correct licenses. But I don't know. It was just, it sucks that this is even the standard. Like, schools and nonprofits should maybe get a pass for things like this. Whereas, like, individuals, I could see it differently, or for-profit businesses. And he just kind of, he only did it for positive press to try to find...
Yeah, he did.
Like, make himself look better. Because otherwise he would have been like, we're changing the standard and you no longer have to pay for it if you're a school raising money for schools or anything of the sort.
Did Bob Iger step in and go, you all going to have to pay this fine?
He didn't say that they didn't have to pay the fine. He said he would make a private donation. In fact, I want to point out, he didn't say Disney was making a donation. That's public record. And it's also basically saying that Disney will support this. He said he personally is making one, which is not on behalf of Disney. It's his own
That's true.
Yeah. So he's a smart guy. He's covering his bases. He's like, hey, I never said you could do that. I said I would help them this time because the internet is whining and we got some movies coming out soon.
The way Amanda was making it sound was that Bob Iger stepped in the middle of them playing the movie and he was like, all right, well, there's a fine coming to you guys.
No, she didn't. Yeah. No, she didn't.
Yeah, well, no, she was, because she keeps on addressing him, he. You know, all he ended up doing was, like, probably, he was probably in his, like, his penthouse office building. He was, you know, probably getting a foot massage by some secretary or something. And all of a sudden, he's like, what, they fined a school for playing one of our movies? Oh, well, that's kind of crappy. How much did they fine him? Oh, well, how much are they trying to make? Let's send him another school. You know,
I
didn't mean that he was literally stepping in. It was just more metaphorical that he decided to interject and make himself look a little bit better and have better press.
Because the way the news is making it sound is Disney is fining them. And no, Disney is not fining them. They got what got back to the motion picture or whoever puts that stupid FBI warning at the front of the damn movie. It got back to them that, hey, this school is charging people. And that organization said, all right, you're going to get fined to play this because you don't have the right to do that.
That's true.
They don't have a right to do it. So, I mean, we all have to acknowledge they don't have a right. None of us have a right to do it. We've all done it. None of us have a right to do it. But we've all done it. I bet you Bob Iger, I bet you he does it at his own, in his backyard, his pool party. He'll have a big giant party. People come over and they'll watch Lion King. And I bet you he doesn't get permission for that. Bob.
I didn't know there were limitations on playing the movie with people.
It's public.
You can play, you can't play it and charge people to go see it if you don't have the proper license to do it.
But are they, I don't know that they were necessarily charging rather than trying to fundraise. That's different.
What do you do when you're fundraising? What do you ask for?
You're raising money,
Hang on. What do they call that when they give you something at those events? It's probably money.
Yes, but my point is, it's not like they're charging to have access to the event. Anybody could come to it, but they were trying to raise money for it. Because in the release, they never declined anyone's attendance based on them being able to pay.
Right, but they're still trying to raise. The whole purpose is to make money. That's the whole goal. And you can't do that at a public event and show movies. I mean, that's why they have those warnings. That's why Interpol is going to come get our asses if we try to do that. Hell, we've tried to do that. And they're like, no, you got to have a license.
Meow.
Yeah, I'm just saying for like public entities and especially like educational systems like schools and nonprofits, I feel, and this is just my own opinion, should have a little bit of an exemption here. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that what they're doing in their current status was legal or not legal, because we know that what they did was
legal,
not within the guidelines.
If they were having
moving forward,
if they were babysitting a bunch of kids in the lobby, and that's considered public, and they weren't charging anyone for that purpose, that would be okay, I think. Teachers watch movies in classrooms all the time, and I don't think they have to pay for anything because they're not charging.
Well, the librarians get the licenses.
See, well, there you go. I don't know. I don't understand. What? We should move on. This has been like 6 hours on this Lion King $250.
Bob Iger charging people, you know, right there in front of them with a credit card machine and one of those bricks on it.
That's what she said. What about you, John? What stood out for you?
I don't know. I'm still having that picture of Bob Iger with a PayPal brick.
Well, he's got the machine.
He's tweeting out his Cash App to them.
Right. You know, so what I want to know is, like, Mad Max 5, is it going to be actually about Mad Max, or is it just going to be Mad Max sitting backseat to somebody else being a badass again?
Furioserer.
Right.
I'm just wondering if we're going to have, like, a real plot and destination, because Mad Max Fury Road, we went from A to B, back to A, and we did a giant circle.
And it was great.
I don't think we ever actually hit B. It just went A and turned right back to A again.
Yeah, they were almost to B, and then they're like, oh, you know what we should do? We should go back where we just came from. We'll just go a different way. We'll throw them right off. And that's what that was. I'm fine with that. Do that again.
It looked cool.
Maybe this time they actually get to B, and then they go to C, and then go back to A.
That's a whole lot of alphabets.
Just go crazy. I like it. All right.
Doctor Strange 2. Hey.
Sam Raimi.
I'm excited.
Sam Raimi's back in the MCU, man. Yeah.
He's officially in the MCU. Before he wasn't in the MCU.
Shut your whore mouth. He was definitely in the MCU just because they hadn't thought of it yet. He was making the right Marvel choices at the right Marvel time. Damn it.
Don't get him heated on the Spider-Man talk, please.
God, I hope not. Doctor Strange can finally bring Uncle Ben back. It would be great. He just opens a portal and then here comes Cliff Robertson or whatever. I don't care. Bruce Campbell is Uncle Ben. Bring him in there. Let's do this.
That would be awesome.
It would. Okay, let's be serious. Why is Sam Raimi doing Doctor Strange 2 instead of Scott Derrickson, who I thought just did an okay job in the first movie? Why is that a good thing to you, John?
He just has a way with the camera that not a lot of people do. Like his whole background is working with the Super 8 film and making those movies gave him a field of view that nobody has in movie right now. And even it's funny because so many people look at what he's done and inspired them to become a director, but nobody's really making those kinds of moves. Like that fast camera coming right at you. That's kind of janky. I mean, nobody's doing anything like that. And you know, it seems like he has a good handle on the mysticism that could be in, or that could be that actually is in Doctor Strange.
Yeah. It adds a darker element to it. Like, I feel like all of his movies, obviously he has a lot of horror in his repertoire, but even in Spider-Man, when we look at those, there's a distinction in the way that the films come across to how the current MCU is, which is, to me, it always feels very uppity and it feels kind of jovial in a way, whereas his movies have a more somehow realistic element to it. And we connect with them as people, even though they're superheroes. And so I would like to see that kind of come back in.
Well, and especially, if you go watch Spider-Man 2, I think it's, 2, where they're in the operating room and they has that horror element, even though it's a brief scene with Dr. Octopus.
Right.
It shows 100% that Sam Raimi can do that. He can make a horror/comic book flick without problem. He can introduce horror elements and still keep it PG-13, still keep it safe for Marvel. And that's what I think they want to do with Strange. They want to introduce a little bit more of a horrific element. And who better to do it than the guy who's done it his whole career?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm down.
I'm down too. Okay. Well, that's going to, I think, do it. There's really nothing there that move me. I mean, I'm glad we're getting another Mike Flanagan horror series, Haunting the Hill House. The Bly Manor is coming out. Now he's going to do this other one, Midnight Mass. It seems like he's used the success of Haunting of Hill House to kind of establish a brand, which I love. I think that's pretty fantastic. It gives us something to look forward to every year, really.
Yeah, I can't wait. I like his brand of horror. I like his shooting style. I like everything about his storytelling. So I can't wait to see what he does.
Yeah, I think we'll pretty much watch anything that he decides to put out at this point.
Is he the greatest television director of all time?
He doesn't do just television, John.
So
I wish I was going to call you Jonathan and then it was going to be very wrong.
Would that make it the greatest director of all time?
Come on.
I can't stand either of you. I hope you know that.
I love Mike Flanagan. I think he's a great director. Dr. Sleep, that final act, I thought was really clunky. He has misfires, so it's not like he's impervious, my opinion. Love the guy, though, you know? So I look forward to seeing what he does.
Personally, you guys hang out often.
Yeah. I mean, we're close. We're tight. Definitely. We're tight, and that he doesn't know my name at all. All right, our show is independently funded, therefore all the expenses are from our own pockets. A Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts, and once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. Lots of bonus content. Bad Movie Night, where we look at a movie that we think is actually not so bad, and we talk about that. Heartbreakers is coming up next. Right in time for Valentine's Day. Nothing says love like con women taking you for all your money. So you can support...
And Jennifer Love Hewitt in a slinky, skimpy dress.
All of them. All the slim, skimpy dresses that she could find. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider if you want to support us. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. There's also bonus episodes where we talk about all kinds of stuff. But we also have the winner of our Ho annual Oscar contest. Amanda, who is the winner?
So our winner for the Hollywood Outsider Oscar contest for the 2020 was AJ Goel. Anyway, that person. Yeah, me too. And so if you want to actually send us an email, feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, using the email that you registered for the contest with, and let us know what movie you want your prize to be, up to $25 limit, as was indicated in your, I don't know, the little asterisk said it.
The rules.
And then we'll get your prize.
We call those rules, Amanda. Those are rules.
Yeah, the rules. Yeah, the rules. Also, make sure you include your mailing address so that way we can get it to you. Otherwise, you're not going to have it. Unless you want digital, then we can give you digital.
And remember, this is important. This is part of the rules. Physical copy only if you live in the U.S. It's going to be a digital copy everywhere else, just so you know. So if you want a digital, just tell us what the movie is and what preferred platform, Voodoo or Amazon or whatever.
And make sure you email us.
Feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And don't all of you start sending us emails, because we know the email address. And only that one is going to get the prize. That's it.
Yep.
All right. Let's move into our spoiler-free reviews. We got Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. Now, it used to be Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. They just changed it. Sure. Because they realized it was a dumb title to begin with. Why would they think that was a good title? I don't know. But all three of us actually saw it. This is interesting. So Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. The movie made me want to be a less terrible person. There's a connection if you saw it. Margot Robbie's Harleen Quinzel has broken free of the chains of her overwhelmingly toxic relationship with the Joker, and she's ready to celebrate her independence. Jared Leto never gets a face shot in this movie, just so you know. Unfortunately for Quinn, celebrating her freedom also means zero protection from everyone in Gotham City that wants her head on a stick. When the evil crime lord Roman Sionis, who's played by Ewan McGregor and also known as Black Mask, puts a $500,000 bounty on a young spunky girl named Cassandra Cain's head, Quinn teams up with Huntress, Black Canary, and Detective Renee Montoya to take Roman down. Amanda, this was an action flick made for women and by women, although still very accessible to men. Do you feel like Kathy Yan did Harley Quinn and her Birds of Prey justice? Was her story here to respect at all? How did you feel about this? Because a lot of people have opinions about this movie before they even see it.
Yeah, that happened, which we anticipated. This movie I thought was great because the way that they introduce the female elements, the female representation is not just in the actresses that are there, but in the small little hints of things that happen throughout it that women or men who have had the pleasure of being with a woman for a long time can start to understand the things that they might be drawn to that were written into the script and kind of the actions that they take. And I loved that element. I think that Margot Robbie was amazing as Harley Quinn, and she really gave justice to that character. But she wasn't the only standout. Well, there was.
I get that. Hang on. We're not. Hold up. Let me direct this traffic. So the story, though, do you feel like there was a strong enough story to merit having its own movie as opposed to being part of Suicide Squad or just being a side character, essentially?
I do, but in the way that it was simplistic and not overly complex, but something that was still enjoyable and had, to me, real stakes and different things that were happening to continue the plot, where it wasn't, You know, we weren't just sitting in a moment like, okay, this is not fun, this is boring. It really kept us hyped up throughout the film and had the progressional story change. So I feel like it was. What about you guys?
Well, one of the things I really enjoyed about the story is just how tight and small it was in comparison to a lot of the comic book stories that are out there today. It wasn't something that was world ending. It wasn't something where they were fighting a horde of monsters. It was just a bunch of awesome kick-ass girls who end up getting in a situation where they have to fight a single dude and his army of thugs, and for, you know, for reasons, let's just say. And it was nice to see something so tight, compact, and didn't have to be such a big deal, and was really gave us an ability to focus on the characters that we had in front of us, which each one of them was fun and nuanced in their own way.
Well, I want to say this is exactly how I felt about it. Watching the movie reminded me of how am I allowed to say this? I don't know, but I think Amanda agrees with me, of how most women in my life tell me a story. They start and they're gonna tell me the story, and then we got to bounce back, and then we got to fill it in, and then we got to pull in, here's a side character you didn't know about. We got to mention them real quick. By the way, food. That's how I feel like Harley Quinn is as a character, and how most women I know tell me a story. It was a really unique way to do it, because I'm like, so often, and people keep saying it's nonlinear. I don't consider this nonlinear. I consider this a movie that's being told from the perspective of Harley Quinn.
Right.
And that's what it means. To me, it's a little different. It's just she bounces around. She likes to fill in the gap. She likes to expand on her story. And oh, yeah, I forgot about this one. And that is how most of the women I know in my life tell me a story. Guys are very, man, we went to the thing and the thing happened. That was crazy. We're really that.
And women want to fill in all the details.
Yes.
And so as we go along with the story, we start talking about something. And as you all are so familiar with, we get derailed and we get onto another topic. And we're like, oh, you know what? While I was talking about this one thing, it prompted me to think about something else that I didn't fill you in on. So let me tell you that.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to get back to the main story. And to me, I could follow everything 100% clearly, because that's how my mind works.
Yeah. So you agree with me, right? Like, that's how the story was being told. Like, Harley Vision.
It was. I mean, the narration certainly helps guide you in that direction, so that way it feels that way. But it's supposed to be a representation of how women tell stories. This is a story told by female filmmakers, and it's told from a female character, and it's about a female character and other female characters. But it's not, it's still easily acceptable to other people. This isn't supposed to be a film where it alienates any other gender or sex. It's supposed to still be inclusive, but give you a little bit of a different perspective to hear the story from. And I loved that so much.
So, Amanda, who did stand out from you for the cast?
Black Canary.
Oof.
Oh, my God. I loved her. I loved her. She was comparable to the love I had for Margot Robbie in this film. She just stood out to me. Not only her entire aesthetic and the way that she handled her character and the way that she moved and the way that she talked and the way that she grooved. Her singing was amazing. Everything about her was fantastic, and she was kick-ass and she was fun. And she was grounded as a character. Like, I understood how she worked. And I really loved her. I felt like you could connect with her, even though she had some of her own reservations, which is a little bit of a polarizing opposite from Harley Quinn, who she kind of lays everything out on the sleeve, on her sleeve. She certainly wears her heart there. And Black Canary was a little bit of an opposite character in the fact that she has all of these things and thoughts and experiences, but she tries to keep it to herself. But she does have a big heart.
Yeah, Journey Smollett-Bell was just awesome. And I was looking forward to seeing Black Canary on the big screen, because we've seen her several times on the small screen. And all three iterations of her have been cool. But this one just took it to an nth degree, which she was just amazing. I really love Journey's portrayal of her. She's just awesome and strong. And it was hard, because a lot of times she almost was able to grab some of the attention away from Harley, which is interesting, because Harley is such a huge character who plays everything large, whereas you have Black Canary being playing everything so much smaller, but still being able to draw some of that magnetism to her.
So I thought, really, they were all fine. Huntress was kind of a cool character. I mean, she just weird. And she kept trying to be cooler than she was. She was almost like she was the bride from Kill Bill, but not quite. Could never quite get there. She was never as edgy as they wanted her to be, kind of thing. But to me, the whole movie hinges on Harley Quinn and Margot Robbie's performance, which is insane as always. And Ewan McGregor was actually, he was really fun in this one in a very campy way, but he never went too far over. So I really enjoyed everybody, honestly. Black Canary as well. So overall, a fun cast. And man, Rosie Perez. I haven't seen her in, God, White Man Can't Jump, I guess. I don't even know where she's it's been a while. It's been a minute. And she still looks great, acts great. She's still very talented. I wish she'd do more stuff. And she got to shine a little bit here. So that was nice. The R rating, Amanda, was it necessary or was it overkill? Because the box office was a lot lighter for this one. A lot of people are saying it's because it's PG-13, or I'm sorry, it's not PG-13, which I would agree with. A lot of young girls love Harley Quinn, which I'm sure drove a lot of Suicide Squad, and alienating them kind of kept them out of the theaters. Did you think the R rating was necessary?
I think it was worth it. But I also think that you're talking about a lot of young girls. I feel like most of the girls that the targeted audience for Harley Quinn would lie above 17 years old and be able to get into the R rating. And it would probably range from 17 to maybe like 29 or so is like their target audience in terms of a range. So I feel like this movie is accessible to the girls that really connect with that character and desire more from her. Maybe some would fall into like 16 or possibly 15, but I really don't think that it would stretch that far into taking away from it. I think most of it has to do with the trailer. The trailer was god awful. It was not a fair representation of what this movie is. And especially looking back on it, because I didn't want to see this movie at all based off of the trailer. It was just because of the positive response from individuals who had screened the film that were praising it for so many different reasons that I decided to give it a shot. And I'm so glad I did. But I think that the name, the title, which I'm glad they changed it, because it wasn't that also wasn't a good representation. The marketing just in general really fell flat for this film. They didn't do it justice.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think the rating was completely unnecessary. The one problem I have with the movie personally is they swear for the sake of swearing. Deadpool is guilty of this too, where they're just dropping them F-bombs left and right because they can. It stopped feeling like how people talk and more like we can just say whatever, we can say it. We can just drop as many F-bombs as we want. Yay us. And it got a little old. I'm like, I don't really think that was needed. I think they could have gotten a PG-13 and been fine.
Agreed.
That's probably my only problem with the movie. And I felt this way with several movies that are R-rated sometimes. It just feels a little too much.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way at all about the language. None of it bothered me. None of it fazed me.
I mean, I totally agree with Aaron on the whole language factor, because if there was anything that took me out of the movie at any given point, it was the simple fact that they were dropping F-bombs like they were dropping chiclets. I mean, it was pointless, and I didn't see a need to actually do that for the exception of, yeah, we're a comic book movie and we're doing F-bombs because we can do that. And it's just so unnecessary, and it really did rob the movie of some of its joy, just because of their willful ability to throw the F-bomb around. It just, you know, it's not that necessary.
But you could argue that for most of the films that have language like that, and we're not hearing that regarding those.
I'm going to completely disagree with you. I 100%, I know when a movie is like, all right, that was natural. I think Deadpool does it as well. It doesn't make me like the movie any less, but especially Deadpool 2, like there were getting to be too many dick jokes just for the sake of it, as opposed to this was natural, this was funny. I felt the same thing here.
Love Tarantino, and like 3/4 of his films are combined with poor language, like vulgar language.
No, the writing is so much sharper, man. I mean, I would not compare Tarantino to the script. Right. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about the pure language aspect. That's never been an issue for that. It's never been an issue for most of the comic book movies that have had that.
I would invoke that Tarantino should not be compared, because his dialogue flows. It's part of his characters. It's part of their being. This, to me, there are many, many moments where I'm like, that was, you're just like dropping F-bombs left and right for no reason.
And I don't think it's for no reason. I think that is natural when women aren't shaped into this is how you're supposed to talk.
It's not an attack on female. This has nothing to do, male or female, has nothing to do with it.
I'm not referring to that. I'm saying this is still natural, though. As somebody who has had conversations with women who talk like this, this didn't come across unnatural.
It felt like Joe Pesci wrote the script. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Well, teach them. I mean, it wasn't a nitpick. I still really enjoyed the movie. I'm just saying, to me, it felt that way.
Yeah.
The action scenes, if anything, really, they were very brutal. The insanity about them was just fantastic. And of course, Chad Stahelski had something to do with it because his company did the stunt choreography. The guy behind John Wick. And he even came in to fine-tune the action. I think you can tell, obviously, because those stunts were phenomenal. Harley Quinn was beating everyone's ass. What did you feel about, did you feel like the stunts were a lot better than you expected from this movie?
I mean, first of all, everything was better than I expected with this movie based off the trailer, but 100% the characters really flowed as a natural choreography in the moves. I could buy every single action that was happening as, okay, there's not a stunt person. This is just how Margot Robbie flips around. And no, that's not how it's happening. Of course, all of these individuals have some sort of a stunt performer that's connected with them, but it felt natural to me. And there was a level of humor in the way that the choreography was created, the way that the action was cultivated. There was just, it was fun. It was engaging. It was, wow, that was awesome. There were so many elements to it where I was like, this is great. And I think that was one of the most beneficial pieces to the film is the way this action flows.
I love that she does cocaine and then it's a fantastic action scene. that was good.
She gets hit with a cocaine cloud and all of a sudden she raffle stomps everybody.
It's great. Oh, it's fun. All right. So $10 full price of admission. What do you give Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey?
$7.50.
All right. It's pretty close.
Pretty close. Yeah.
All right, John, you saw Lock and Key, Amanda, lead them through it.
So following their father's murder, three siblings move into a house filled with reality-bending keys. It's from the comics by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. John, I read your review on the website, and there's a lot of really great reviews, but yours seemed like it was a little bit of a mixed bag with elements that kind of fell short and others that really did great. What were the biggest factors in your thoughts behind the show?
You know, my biggest problem connecting to the show was really the opening, really. I had a hard time really connecting to the three major characters. Sure, the youngest character was easy to follow, and Bodhi was just amazing. I was always impressed when Bodhi was on the screen doing something because that little actor is just so amazing. But the two older kids were just mopey, droopy lumps of clay, which they have a rightful reason to. But at the same time, maybe it's because of the time in which I was watching it. I wasn't in the mood for something like this.
Very CW, I guess.
Yeah, very much. And actually, the cast is highly CW because one of the things I noticed is that there's the casting of some of the secondary characters, though they are all fantastic characters, very good casting. Some of them were just pretty enough to get the mannequin stick out of their ass to step out of the department store window.
Yeah, I was waiting for because I watched a couple episodes and I'm waiting for the Riverdale cast to just walk by at some point.
Oh, highly possible.
Yeah. I think it's the same set. I'm convinced it's the same set.
So, okay. I didn't know if there was any more thoughts on the biggest factors for you, but
I got derailed, and so I wanted to give you the floor again so we can stay on track.
That's okay. I was going to go into one of the elements that you really spoke highly of, which was the production value. Does it resemble HBO level standards, or is it more just high level Netflix?
Damn.
Whoa. She just
threw a gauntlet on HBO and Netflix at the same time. Like, HBO, they got the shit going on. Now, Netflix, raise your game, son.
I would actually say that Netflix and HBO are hand in hand, but
I think she's got this one.
You think so? All right. Well, by whatever standards you're talking about, I would say it could be comfortably found on HBO. A lot of the effects can be comfortably found on the big screen without fail. Like, the effects were pretty great, I thought.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Fair enough. I saw the first episode and I didn't know what I was getting into when I started watching it. And so it really took me, the mirror scenes I thought were really well executed.
Oh, I don't.
You don't?
That's probably my biggest problem with the effects. I'm like, I thought those look, well, parts of it looked okay. And then parts of it looked really cheesy. So I just like, it went back and forth for me in that one, but there's a lot of cool stuff in that scene. So maybe it's just in my head. When they went into the mirror, it was great. Once they were in there, that's where I was kind of like, oh, I don't know about that. It looked a little.
Well, John, I know you're normally a really big comic book nerd and you haven't read The Lock and Key, but does the content in the show inspire you to check out the comics at all?
It does inspire me to want to check out the comics. The story here is something that I like I said in my review, it's a nice combination of magical whimsy with the spine of a haunted house. It has the ability of doing both, and it's pretty localized that way. The thing about this story and these characters that I did like, especially Amelia, who is playing Casey or Kinsey Locke, Amelia has this almost magical ability to call up a tear drop to the front of her bottom eyelid, and it just hangs there. And you almost want it to drop, but it doesn't drop. And you just kind of feel for her. And you just, it's just weird how she can do it. But she's just amazing at pulling things off like that. But I do want to see where the birth of this idea came from. So I do want to check out the comic book for sure.
It reminds me a lot of Amblin Entertainment, you know, from the 80s. It's very, very magical, has a dark overtone, but it never goes too dark from what I've seen. Maybe it does later on. I haven't seen the whole show. John did. So is that true? Does that hold up where it feels very Amblin-esque?
It is very Amblin-esque, and it does actually get quite a bit darker.
Okay.
The character Dodge, which I don't know where you are in the story, but...
Second episode, so not very far.
Okay, so she is the lady in the well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dodge is a scary, scary character. And really, what finally tipped me into going from, you know, the show's pretty cool, it's kind of all right, was really her. Because at one point, she's doing some things throughout the house and she's doing something. And I, all of a sudden, I'm just kind of like, I'm in. I can't believe. I don't want to see what she's doing. I don't want her to hurt anybody. And all of a sudden, I find myself rooting for these people because she is, in a lot of ways, very despicable.
Because they introduce her briefly in the first episode, so it's not like we're going in too much too far. But she also, the actress, just from what I saw in episode one, which is very minimal, she kind of reminded me of the actress from The Witcher, the girl who was...
There's some similarities there. She's actually, if you saw Tallgrass, she was in that.
Okay.
Yeah, Laisla de Oliveira. Oliveira.
Yeah. I've heard it both ways.
I haven't. I don't think
anybody's ever heard it that way.
So overall?
Overall, I think it's worth the watch. I think there's going to be a variation of mileage for everyone, but it is definitely worth the sit. And I've been looking at a lot of the reactions on the internet, and a lot of the people that I generally trust over this tell me that they are really happy with it. And again, I enjoyed it. I don't feel like I wasted my time sitting in the theater. My home theater.
I was going to say, like, you went to the theater and just, like, gave them money to play this thing, or what?
How did you swing that?
You know, I don't feel like I wasted my time, and I think it's got a great footing for it in the future. I don't know how much further they can take this story. I kind of hope for not much further, like maybe another season or two, but I can dig it.
All right, new release is coming out on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day. If you really want to get your lady or significant other, whatever you're into, happy. You want to make her day. You want to treat her right. Take her to see Sonic the Hedgehog. After discovering a small, blue, fast hedgehog, a small-town police officer must help it defeat an evil genius who wants to do experiments on it. Jim Carrey and James Marsden star in it. Should be noted that, yes, they did change the design. It's going to be a much sexier Sonic, so your lady is really going to love you. And if that doesn't work, take her to see Fantasy Island, because nothing says love like Fantasy Island. We all remember the show as a kid, right? We loved it. This is different. It's a horror adaptation of the popular TV show about a magical island resort. Lucy Hale, Michael Pena, and Maggie Q star, and people will frickin' die. Downhill. That's another one you can take your love to. Barely escaping an avalanche during a family ski vacation in the Alps, a married couple is thrown into disarray as they are forced to reevaluate their lives and how they feel about each other. Will Ferrell and Julia Louise Dreyfus. Boy, they are really throwing the love at you on Valentine's Day. Oh, finally. Finally, we have one. Lakeith Stanfield and Issa Rae star in The Photograph, a series of intertwining love stories set in the past and in the present. Thank God we got at least one.
Well, we have two because we have one on VOD on Valentine's Day. It's called A Simple Wedding. A young Iranian-American woman goes to great lengths to appease her parents and their need to see her settled down. Mm. That's like all of those conversations when you're single and you go to Thanksgiving and everybody asks you, so who are you dating? Are you going to get married next year? And you remind them, I'm single and I brought an entire bottle of wine.
Well, this movie is based on a culture. So I understand that my wife comes from a culture like that. So it's a much different world. Thanksgiving, you're getting off light, let me tell you.
That's true. That's true.
And then on the 18th, we have Kill the Monsters on VOD. Three men struggle to save their relationship while traveling across country and in search for a doctor they believe will make one of them well. This is written and directed by Ryan Lonergan. It is weird. I'm just,
fair enough.
Go watch the trailer. You're going to be like, that's weird.
Well,
even that comes from you. I thought this title was given for you to read the description for because of Kill the Monsters.
No, it was given to him because it was funny, because it looks like his kind of movie. Then you go look at it and you're like, nope.
Nope.
So it was really, I was setting him up for monumental disappointment. That was the guy.
Yeah, I watched the trailer going, okay, this is going to get, what's going on here?
Yeah. All right, so.
Which one's the big spoon?
For Valentine's Day, what are you guys going to watch? What's your pick of the week?
Ooh.
You can only pick one, Grasshopper.
I know. I'm stuck between two, actually.
We're shocked, Amanda. We're stunned that you couldn't decide between.
Hey, normally I choose one movie for this.
And we hope that continues. John, what about you?
Fantasy Island.
Same here. Fantasy Island. That's my pick.
That's what I wrote down, but I do want to see Sonic. So I'll go with Fantasy Island. I'll keep
Well, I want to see
down.
All of them. Everyone. I want to make everybody happy. Everyone.
I just want to point out how we just made a big joke about how you can't pick one. And you're like, yeah, I wanted to see that one too. But I also want to see Sonic. You couldn't help yourself.
You have a problem.
But I chose one. I said, I'm going to go with Fantasy Island. That's one I'm going
to see. You didn't choose one. You had to mention two.
Yeah, that's not what
happened. You guys do that crap all the time. Just because you call me out on it doesn't make it any different from what you do.
Does too. We said it first.
Right.
Flag planted.
Whatever. Let's go to the outside in.
All right. Our From the Outside In topic this week is bad TV couples. I almost said something completely different. Bad TV couples. Anybody who loves television has a favorite couple, maybe several favorites. We all love them. Have you ever had a show that you love, though, and two characters got together and it ruined it for you?
Yes.
Do tell.
Twice. The first one was Bones, and I liked the two characters, and I liked the show, and then they got together, and I stopped watching the show because I was done.
Wow. Didn't they end up getting married or something?
So that pretty much happened to me, too. Like, as soon as the two Bones characters got together, I was like, well, I'm done with this show.
It just kind of took all the appeal out of their cat and mouse to me. And that's the same thing with my second example. But I continued to watch the show. I didn't give up on this one. And that's because it has Nathan Fillion. And that is Castle.
Yeah, that one was so much more fun when they were maybe will they or won't they? And then they did. And then I was just like, eh. And plus, you knew they hated each other behind
drama.
The scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of those ones when as soon as they started to get together, I think I made it two or three episodes into the relationship. And I was like, well, this is boring now.
Mm-hmm.
And all the magic of the show was still there. It's just that one element really just changed the direction of it for me.
It derailed the show. And I don't know, because I know there was a lot of drama between the two. Mm-hmm. Well, supposedly.
No, there was. We talked to the showrunners, remember? And I'm telling you, they had their summer show. Oh, what was the name of it? We had them on here for an interview, and we talked to them. And let's just say they alluded to that was accurate. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But to me, it was when that maybe the romantic coupling of their characters really started to derail things behind the scenes, too, because now you're putting these two characters in like a different proximity to each other on a regular basis, like that whole dynamic changed. And that's one of my problems with these relationships is you have to make a decision early on how you want this to go. Do you want this to be like a fun, flirtatious thing where these two people still see others, but they have this great relationship as friends and colleagues, but they never cross that line, but we enjoy watching them kind of like teeter to the line, but they never do it? Or do you want them to full on couple? Because very few have ever succeeded. And I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of the few that I can recall where they made a shift far into the show between characters. And these two examples just couldn't pull it off for me.
You know, part of the reason why it doesn't work for me is that when you see the coupling happening, it changes. The writers get lazy and they start changing the characters themselves, or fundamentally changing the characters themselves. And they'll start putting them in situations like, you know, the guy who never really had any people interested in him all of a sudden has all these people interested in him. And so he might accidentally kiss some other girl. And it's like, wait a minute. We just spent the last 3-4 years watching you pine and respect everything about this person. Now that somebody else is showing you interest, you change at a drop of a dime like that. Like, these are things to me that I find hard to believe, and I get annoyed when writers do it.
Yeah, well, I had one of my favorite shows of the 90s was The X-Files. Like, I absolutely adore that show, and I know a lot of people really wanted Mulder and Scully to get together, but you know why I love their partnership is because for the longest time, they didn't come across as a romantic couple. I don't care how much people wanted them to get together. If you really watched those episodes before they started making the bad call of making them lovers, they were a man and a woman who could actually be opposite sexes and actually have a platonic relationship where they loved each other deeply. They would do anything for it. They were just friends. It was wonderful because TV didn't have that. These partners you can rely on, because TV always devolves into this need to make everybody a couple just because the fans want it. And whenever the fans want it and they get it, it never works that way. It just doesn't work well. And to me, it kind of ruined the show in a way. Now, granted, I still like the resurgence. I like the movies and then they're in a relationship in that. But whenever they bring up the relationship part of it, it just stops working for me. And it really, really, really hurt my love for The X-Files, because they made it part of the show when it didn't need to be. The reason I love The X-Files is because of their relationship. They would do anything for each other without being romantically involved, without doing it, without having a Superman baby. You know, all that stuff is why I love that show, and they ruined it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, one show that both worked and didn't work for me was Psych. Like, initially, when Sean and Juliet got together, that stopped working for me, because you can tell that they're trying to set it up for Sean screwing everything up and Sean being Sean, which is fine because it's actually part of his character, and him screwing things up as actually part of the character. I just didn't want to see it happen because it was like this big shining light in the sky. Yep. Of here's what's going to happen next.
Ruined that whole season too. When he basically comes out and says, hey, you know, this was when he has to be truthful to her. That whole season was ruined because all it became for the next 5 or 6 episodes was him and Juliet. And they just forgot, like, Gus and Sean are why people watch this show.
Right. Absolutely. And then once they put them back together again, that's when the show got good again.
Because as much as people were like fine with them having a relationship and they were shipping them and all that other jive, to me, the most romantic couple of Psych is Sean and Gus.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody's going to get together. I'd rather those two did. I didn't care. But Sherry Thomas in her Facebook group, she agreed with me that the worst example of this is probably the one that most people refer to and that apparently studios still haven't learned from, which is Moonlighting and Maddie and David. Mm. They had that back and forth. It was some of the most wonderful chemistry I've ever seen in television. And you just felt the passion and the sparks and the everything between those two, and they had to put them together and completely destroyed that show. That was my favorite TV show in the world until they got together, and it never recovered from it. Never. They never got that spark back.
That's a good one.
Very disappointing. Are there shows where you just dread any potential romantic couplings? Like, it just doesn't belong in these kinds of shows or those specific shows, John?
Yeah, you know, there's two of them that I'm thinking about right now that I really hope there's no romantic coupling happening, because part of the joy of them is the will they won't they, and I want them to either find a way to make it keep going or to eventually just shoot it in the foot. And that's the first one that comes to mind is Maeve and Otis from Sex Education.
Mm.
I don't want those two to get together, as much as every part of the story wants them to, and I'm sure a lot of other fans want them to. I'm really glad they're not together right now, because that is part of the magic of the show at the moment, is them not being together. And it really, fundamentally, those two characters should not work as a couple. And anyone who wants to argue that can fight me on it.
I'm going to agree with you. I do think that they would make a cute couple in a way. And I ship them and I want them to be together. But that's also part of the joy and the magic, like you're saying, is them not being together. And we want them to, but just things don't work out that way. And they're going to have to continue on their journey and hopefully just become really close friends. And that's what I'm hoping for. So I would agree with that. Mine kind of goes back to what Aaron was saying with X-Files. Anytime there's a show that tries to honor the boundaries of friendships, like if you cross that bridge, if you decide to do that, there's no coming back, and you've changed the entire dynamic and of the relationships and the purpose of the show when you do that. When you decide, okay, I'm going to start off this show with these two individuals who are friends, and we're showing this relationship of friendship, and then we're going to decide to make them a couple down the line or make them interested in each other, you've changed the entire point. The point was for you to showcase meaningful opposite sex relationships, or, you know, if it's homosexual individuals and they would naturally be attracted to each other, but they're just friends, you've now changed that entire dynamic and ruined all of the past relationship building up to that moment, because now it feels like everything we built up to here was a lie.
Yeah, I completely agree with it. In fact, I'll take it a step further. Maybe this makes me sound like a very sad, sad person. I don't want love in almost any show. I just don't want it. I don't care. You know, I don't watch TV for romantic stories. I watch it for dragons and crime and violence and profanity. I don't need a love story. It's just not something. Now, granted, I realize that's just me, but I don't want it. And then when you have it and you kind of cram it in there, it's just like Dexter and anyone but Rita, anyone after Rita. I just don't like it. I just, ugh. He had the romance. It obviously wasn't meant to be. He doesn't need any more. I realize you're trying to hit all the quadrants or whatever, but sometimes it doesn't fit a show. Stranger Things. I don't need anyone else falling in love with Eleven. I can totally see them doing that just because they feel like they have to. Procedural shows, Law and Order, Hawaii Five-O, CSI, all those kinds of shows. I just want characters in crime solving. I don't need them to have great lives. I just, guess what? I don't think they're real people. So I just don't care. I want them to solve a crime, have some action scenes, have some playful banter, and go back to things. I just don't need love all the time.
To your credit, one of the best non-romantic couples on TV were Benson and Stabler on SVU.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah. And Steve and Danny on Hawaii Five-O, because I'm convinced they love each other in all the wrong ways. But they've never gotten together. So, I mean, they have a great platonic relationship. I don't care.
I also think writers need to take into consideration. So they're obviously going to decide, okay, we want to bring these two individuals together, even if that was their original game plan, introducing new characters. If you're not mapping out the actual chemistry of the actors and determining that as part of your execution on this romance, you should be evaluating that. And if those two characters don't work, you either need to find a new actor who has chemistry with the one you want them to have chemistry with, or you need to scrap that idea and work up something new. I'm on a different level. I like having romance in my TV shows. I'm fine with it. There are certain ones where we can leave it out, but I want them to establish the relationships and work through that dynamic going forward. I don't like the shifty dynamic where, okay, we're going to pretend like you guys are just friends. And then, oh, all of a sudden we're together. And then, oh my gosh, all of a sudden now I'm going to cheat on you with somebody else. And oh, the drama. No.
That's every CW show, by the way, just so you know.
I love those shows. But one example I was going to say is...
It's like the 100 relationships is what they start calling that show.
Murtaugh's marriage is how you can show it from Lethal Weapon is how you can show issues that come up in relationships that aren't about having an affair.
Yeah, I agree with that. That was a great healthy marriage, healthy relationship. You can do that more.
Real problems.
Yeah, and a lot of shows do that. I mean, just don't do it often. Like, I don't need it all the time. Law and Order, I love Law and Order. You know why? Because there's no relationship until they started adding relationship. Oh, we're going to give Benson like all this private drama. Ugh, I hate those episodes. I don't care. And I love her character. I think she does a fantastic job. She deserves every Emmy she's got. I don't care about her personal life. I don't watch Law and Order for feelings. I just don't. I do that. I watch those shows to get away from feelings. I don't want to feel for an hour. I don't want to see their, you know, to me, relationships works better in movies, I guess, because it's more compact. I don't have to deal with it 22 hours. You want
from the headline story.
What's that?
You want that rip from the headline story.
Exactly. Not rip from the headlines. Oh, plus I got this dating problem and, you know, it's not working out. And I got this kid issue now. I don't care.
This kid that I stole from somebody.
Right. And so many shows just add random relationship drama for no reason. What was the show? This was funny. What was the show? It just came. Deputy. Either one of you seen that show, Deputy?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
It's on Fox, on Hulu, if you really want to watch it. It's not a bad show. Stephen Dorff is like this hee-haw cowboy sheriff who ends up becoming a deputy because of some ridiculous law. But there's one of his sheriffs that work for him that him and his wife have been trying to have kids, right? Okay. You with me so far? And yeah. So they go into this drug house and they end up killing this drug lord in front of his kids. Then they take those kids and they become their foster parents. And now they're in the process of trying to adopt those kids. Let me reiterate. They killed their dad literally in front of them. And now they have somehow, apparently, you know, the deputy pulled some favors. That's a hell of a favor. And have the kids living with them, possibly to adopt them so they can have all this manufactured drama for their relationship and everything else. And I'm just like, none of that makes any kind of sense in the world. That's trying too hard to make relationship drama on a TV show.
Forget that.
Yeah. And there's one scene where he tells the kid, someday when you grow up, you might want to take me out and I'll understand. I'm like, yeah, he should do it tomorrow. You're making him live with you after you killed his dad. You son of a bitch. What kind of
nightmare fuel is that?
What kind of sadistic son of a bitch are you? God. All right. What are your three worst TV couples you've ever experienced? The three worst, Amanda.
All in one time?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So my first is from Parks and Rec. Tom and Anne. Oh my gosh, I just slaughtered that.
I don't even know who they are, and I know you got it wrong.
Tom and Anne. They just had no... This is Rashida Jones' character and Aziz Ansari.
Oh, that just sounds like a bad mix, really.
It was just, I understand why they initially brought them in and that would have been fine because then they broke up and it was like, okay, this is just not going to work. But then they kept going back to that and it was horrible. Just let it die. Nobody wants this. Nobody asked for it. Nobody needs it.
You know what's interesting is I actually enjoyed the relationship they had. Well, it only lasted for like three or four episodes. It wasn't even that big of a deal, but it really played on the fact that Tom Haverford was just a joke of a cartoon character, and it was really cool to see a character like Anne, like instead of putting up with BS from a moron character just because she could, like she did with Andy when she had Andy, she nipped a lot of the stuff in the bud. So as far as like showing somebody be in a relationship that she wasn't 100% in and giving her the ability of walking out of it, yeah, I think I'll buy it. I'm all for it.
Ugh. Ugh. Okay. I mean, I'll give you that it's your feelings, but I just hard pass. Second one, and this one I'm wondering if Aaron will relate to, if he'll agree or not. Spike and Harmony from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I hated their relationship.
Ugh, it was just gross and annoying and awful, and you could tell that nobody really wanted to be there. Like, the characters, Harmony can get really attached in general,
annoying. She's so annoying. I never liked her.
But Spike was annoyed with her, and yet they were still together. I couldn't buy it. I couldn't buy that he was willing to be part of that when his entire character is built on the foundation of, I'm not doing anything I don't want to.
He was lonely. It was after, Darla? Is that her name?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
after Darla, enduring his huge crush on Buffy.
It was a weird time for him, but
it was a weird time.
Never worked.
I like your choice. I'm going to up your ante on it when it gets to my turn, but I like your choice.
Ooh.
I'm fascinated.
Okay. And my last one is Veronica and Piz from Veronica Mars.
Yeah. He sucked. He's the lamest guy. Like, they put him in the movie and I'm like, ugh, why?
He's just boring and he's not compatible with Veronica at all. Like, he was nice to her and everything, cool, whatever, great. But they extended that relationship far past the expiration date.
You know what would have been cool with his character? If they would have blew him up in a car bomb or something.
Oh, my God.
I think that could have been great.
Oh, boy. Just a quick question. Are you Team Logan?
No. I never liked Logan. I thought they had a very toxic relationship, so I never saw the point. I like Logan a lot as a character. I hated him with Veronica.
Mm.
Always did. Always will.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, she was always the detective. You know, she was always the hard-nosed PI. I felt like she was better served on her own. She didn't need a boyfriend. That's one of those characters where I don't need a relationship. Stop trying to force one on me. I don't need it. It's not why I watch the show. I don't watch it. It's not Veronica / Logan Mars, you know?
Well, not no more.
All right, John, you or me? You choose.
You know what? Let me go, because I already teased the fact that I'm up the ante on
yeah,
this.
Now I'm
Spike
excited.
And Harmony. So my up on the ante, just to get it out of the way, is Spike and Buffy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I knew this one was going to happen.
Horrible. Horrible relationship.
Let's just tell you that, he raped her.
Yep.
That's it. What do I also have to say? Why does this even work? Why do they even have a show about her being... No. That was the... Oh, God. I mean, I like Spike a lot. He's actually... The James Marsters actually reads all the Dresden novels on Audible. And so I have a loving relationship with him. And I like Spike because he was great when he showed up in Angel, even though I was like, wow, two vampires. And they both have souls. I don't know what to happen anymore. But, why?
Yeah, I wasn't big on their relationship when it first started. But then I was like, okay, I can start to buy in it because he actually seems to care about her. And then he raped her. And I was like, this is just the sexual assault piece is just that's not excusable to me. I can't buy that relationship anymore.
Forget that, people. All right. So my next one is Jack and Kate from Lost.
Ooh.
Wow. I'm laughing preemptively. You'll see later.
All right. So I like Jack as a character and I like Kate as a character. I don't like Jack and Kate together because number one, putting Jack and Kate in close proximity to each other, is a strong emphasis on how much out of his element Jack is, because Kate's just so much better at the whole being a badass thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, agreed.
And then, you know, you'd see her with Sawyer, and actually her and Sawyer made a whole lot more sense. And just Jack and Kate from Lost, I can't deal. Like, number one, it was unfair to put her in a love triangle like that. But number two, just her outclassing Jack at every single turn and Jack being a mopey, I can't go back. it didn't work for me.
All right. Number three.
All right, so this one's interesting because this is not something. Well, I guess Lost, I didn't stop watching the show over, and this is another one where the relationship between these two characters was a tough on me, and that's Robin and Ted from How I Met Your Mother.
Oh,
I hated everything about this relationship. It like and And on my second watch of the entire series, I realized why, which is because I got really tired of the will they, won't they, especially after they already have, and especially after Ted opened the relationship by cheating on a really good girlfriend that he had, who just happened to be living in a couple countries away, learning how to bake cookies. Like, who cheats on a person learning how to bake cookies from Germany? I don't know. A moron. But I really did not like them getting together. Them together was not that great. And it's just a testament to how cute and adorable that show is, because I was able to stick it out even through the, I have feelings for Robin, I have feelings for Ted, but you guys are terrible together. I know we're terrible together. You guys shouldn't get together. No, we shouldn't. Why are we still talking about this 7 seasons in? That whole problem.
I never watched it, but you're passionate. So yeah, I hate that. Man, that's a bad couple. I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, they just, I would agree with you. It just felt like at some point it became a little bit forced. And you're passionate about the cookies, and I feel like that makes a strong argument for a case.
Look, a chick goes to move to Germany to learn how to make cookies and donuts and stuff from real chocolate, from German stuff. I am there for it. I'll sit there. I'll be waiting at the airport with every single flower and anything I can to be like, you're back. Can I have cookies now?
You know, fun side story, when I was a teenager, I went to prom with a German exchange student. I went on a couple of dates with her too. Wonderful girl. And I learned that the German people do not like Nazi jokes. Just letting you know.
Oh, boy.
Fun fact. When you... yeah, fun. I'll just leave it at that. they don't like them. It's not good. All right, so my three... I will start with two I've already mentioned, actually. Maddie and David from Moonlighting. Talked about them already. Mulder and Scully from The X-Files. It just makes me mad because I can't even tell you. Those are two shows I worshipped. And both times, them getting together took me out of my favorite shows. Just made them less of my favorites. And it really just broke my heart in many ways.
To real quick add to that, I just started rewatching X-Files recently, mm-hmm. and yeah, I just, now that I look back on it, I'm like, their relationship was so good with the dynamic that they started with.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was perfect that way.
They were true partners in every sense, and whenever she was hurt or she was threatened, he was there for her, and vice versa, and it was just like a... And
it
she
was like brother-sister.
To me, very much so. And she had a very scientific way of going about things. He had a very spiritual way of going about things. And they would always talk about things and come to conclusions based on where they came from and try to see the other person's side. It was like a very healthy relationship in the most unhealthy scenario. And then they just destroyed it because we got to get them together because TV, that's what we do. Now, my third one, John, is Kate and Sawyer. From Lost.
What? I saw that coming.
I hate Kate and Sawyer. They're what I didn't really love Kate and Jack, so it's not like I'm making an argument for them. I actually thought they always took away from her character when she didn't deserve that. They really did her character a disservice throughout that show because they kept making one of the strongest characters on television all about her boyfriend. Or who her boyfriend was right. Or wasn't. And I really hated that aspect of it, which no Lost devotee ever wants to mention. They always want to skip over that. Oh, it was a very progressive and deep shit. Bullshit. Go rewatch that show. They make her into a puppet for half the series. It's just, it's not cool. But her and Sawyer were awful. Never. Look, I love Sawyer. Coolest hair on TV for years. Like he took over for Don Johnson from the 80s, man. He just best hair on TV. But that relationship made me laugh and laugh. What was it? The season when they were in the cages together or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't they hump in the cages or something like that? I just,
yep.
I laughed out loud when they finally got together. I was watching it and I just burst out laughing because to me, there's just nothing about them that had chemistry. Just nothing worked. I mean, at least Jack, I kind of got the vibe like Jack just wouldn't stop begging for her. And she finally's like, fine, we'll make out. But Sawyer and Kate were supposed to be this natural magnetic animal attraction. And man, no, both if they were animals, they should have been put down because they sucked. They were just neutered.
You know, anecdotally, I use Sawyer as my argument as to why I should get my first high def TV, my I think my 52 inch.
I'm curious where this is going.
So I, at the time, I had a plasma, a 37-inch plasma, or I think it was, 37-inch or 42-inch plasma, and it was only a 720p, and the new season was about to happen. It was right around time for the Super Bowl, and I looked at my wife, and I said, hey, you know what? You know what you would really appreciate? And I'm like, and she goes, what's that? I go, what if you were able to, on a much larger screen, see every single bit of glistening sweat off of Sawyer every time he came out of that water on the beach? And she looked over at me and she goes, all right, fine, you win.
Well, whatever gets you the TV, man. I'm all about
right.
that.
Right. I know how to sell things.
I will say that I thought Kate and Sawyer had chemistry. But I also felt like it was like the negative chemistry. Like, that's the toxic relationship that you don't want to be part of, or you shouldn't want to be part of. But I agree 100% with your thoughts on the way her character was represented, and that her focal point was less about her and just about the relationships, her triangle, and these two men kind of like having this beef between each other because of a woman that they both desire. And it was like, come on.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. All right, listener comments. We got to wrap this show up. So, Amanda, who are you reading from? Then we always post the topic in our Facebook group, and then you guys can chime in if you have something to add.
Kyle Nolan agrees, concurs, supports the idea of Bones. Got pretty bad near the end once they were together. I didn't really even need the will they or won't they between them to begin with. So he just didn't even want that part. Tabitha Grace Chalice says Willow and Kennedy and Buffy, it was forced and the actors had no chemistry. Hoorah! Another bad romance from Buffy. And that relationship was god awful. It was mostly just Kennedy and it was very forced. I agree, Tabitha.
Maybe they should have made less romances on Buffy and more vampire attacks.
Maybe.
That would have been hard considering it's a teen angst show, but whatever.
Fair enough. How about you, John?
Rita says the leads on The Mentalist had a pretty cringy romance, I think. And she has a cringy face. I didn't see The Mentalist, but you know, I feel for her.
It was Psych, but a little bit more dramatic.
Was it?
Yeah, pretty much. That's why they made fun of it all the time on Psych.
I realize they made fun of it a lot on Psych. Ronnie Yarrow says, yes, Rick and Michonne on Walking Dead were a pretty bad couple as well.
I liked them. I really did. I thought that was kind of cool when that came out. But, you know, most of the relationships in that show I didn't love. Like Rick and his wife. Never worked for me. He kept fighting to get his wife back. And I'm like, why, dude? She made out with your best friend like after you died like 3 weeks later. Move on.
Or Rick and Carl. That's a bad relationship.
Rick Carl! And the baby.
Oh, Carl. Oh, Carl. Christy Flores says, House and Cuddy. There was no need for a romantic relationship between those two. They had enough years of friendship and work that they could have still brought the drama, pain, and betrayal into the show without making it romantic. 100% agree. That was just weird.
Yeah, which one was Cuddy?
She was the boss.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
And lastly, just to round this Lost out, Jeff Giles says, Saeed and Shannon on Lost. It never made any sense. You know what made it even less sense? Where at the end, it's supposed to be heaven, and Saeed is with Shannon for some reason, when the whole time he's on the island, he's pining for that woman that he lost. You know, the show's name Lost. That's who he lost. Why does he have Shannon? Just because they didn't have anybody else to pair her up with except their brother, and that would just be creepy?
Well, he might have been pining away, but the whole point of them in that whole thing at the end was that they all were bonded because they were on the island.
Keep telling yourself that.
All right. I mean, I will.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode. I think any quick recommendations before we close out?
I got nothing.
Honey Boy.
That's on Hulu now, right?
Amazon Prime.
That's close enough. Why Honey Boy?
It is absolutely shocking. I was not prepared for some of the details that came out of it. And reading a little bit more now that I've seen it as to what is truth, which is the majority of pretty much the whole film. Because in a interview with Shia, which this movie centers around basically his story as he wrote it out when he was going through therapy and created it into a script, he said, everything that you see in the film, I'm paraphrasing, everything you see in the film is truth. It's the things that I didn't even put into it. So there's even more that comes out of it. And I don't even want to think about what could happen that wasn't yeah. part of the film. It was just very eye-opening, and it gives you the exploration into addiction and into, you know, how childhood impacts us through our lives, which we all know all of that, but just to see it and begin to understand why, as still a youth, Shy had some of these outrageous actions and reactions to things, and now he's kind of finding his way.
All right, well, thanks for that, Honey Boy. It's on not Hulu. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else on our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn, or our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and her Twitter is at sinkintothis, and me on The Blacklist Exposed, I'm presenting Hitchcock, and at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. John, what is your whole teachable minute?
My whole teachable minute is this. If you happen to be a bad guy in the middle of a shootout with a psychotic clown chick, and she dives behind a pile of cocaine, whatever you do, don't let her get a contact high out of the cocaine, because she will raffle stomp you within a minute of your life. It's just going to happen. Be smart. Don't give the people you're going against some leverage against you.
Okay. I'll keep that
good
in mind.
Good advice.
You know, this is supposed to be like a realistic teachable minute, right? I guess you might get in a battle with a coked out clown chick. You never know when that's going to happen.
You know what? Yeah.
Okay. Well, remember, guys.
John has had to reevaluate his life choices, so I feel like that's notable.
Right.
We're done. Remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.